It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up on Central Time, we'll get some tips and recipes to create healthier desserts and still delicious desserts on this week's edition of Food Friday.
First, Donald Trump became the 45th president of the United States today, starting a new chapter in American history. After taking the oath of office, the president gave his inaugural address.
From this day forward, a new vision will govern our land. From this day forward, it's going to be only America first. America first.
A moment from President Trump's 16-minute inaugural address where he repeated some major themes from his campaign.
Nehal Tusi was covering the ceremony today. She's a foreign affairs correspondent at Politico. Nehal, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I actually used to work at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, so I'm a big fan.
Welcome back to Wisconsin. Also joining us, Phil Rocco, assistant professor of political science at Marquette University. Phil, welcome.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Nehal, first, give us a sense from where you were watching of the overall tone and mood at the ceremony today.
For the people who were there, they were Trump fans. They were very excited. But there are many protesters as well who are deeply unhappy about the situation. Overall, the crowd size was fairly small compared to past inaugurations. And there's a lot of uncertainty and as part of the mood overall in Washington right now.
And what did you make of the speech? Not a particularly long inaugural speech, but people have pointed out very different in tone than a lot of speeches we've seen in the past.
It was very stark, very dark on a lot of levels. Some people would even say dystopian. His references to America first were a bit scary, I would say, for a lot of American allies who wonder if the U.S. is basically telling them, hey, you're on your own. There was very little nod to the notion of foreign alliances or anything like that. And I think there's a lot of people who are kind of hoping that Mr. Trump would pivot and become a bit softer than he has been in the campaign. And I think their hopes were dashed today.
Phil, what did you make of that? This sounded a lot like his acceptance speech at the nomination. Again, a very dark, painting a dark picture of what the U.S. looks like.
Yeah, I think it's in historical context, you know, it's not that inaugurals don't mention problems in the world, right? Most inaugurals usually identify some problem, whether it's, you know, sluggish economic growth or, you know, maybe some kind of foreign encounter that's negative. But they usually mention it kind of in a breath and then kind of proceed to a positive vision of what the president wants the administration to be. Trump's sort of litany of description of a sort of negative image of America goes on for quite a bit in this speech. And I think that what's interesting is that if you think about what he cites as the origin of the problem, it's in fact, he's pointing to many of the people who were, you know, members of Congress and people who worked in the government, people that were actually surrounding him on the dais. And so that is a pretty different kind of speech than we've seen in the past. And when it comes to his solution, there's kind of only one way. There's not a reference to kind of sort of eternal values, the Constitution or faith or something like that, civic duty, but to the people. Which is not exactly, especially well defined, who they are exactly, who are the people that are going to sort of underwrite his vision.
Talking to Phil Rocco from Marquette University and Nehal Tusi with Politico, looking at today's inauguration. Along that line, let's give a listen to that message about who has political power.
For too long, a small group in our nation's capital has reaped the rewards of government while the people have borne the cost. Washington flourished, but the people did not share in its wealth. Politicians prospered, but the jobs left and the factories closed.
You could hear that Nahal maybe appealing to people on the far right and on the far left, too. Occupy Wall Street might have said something similar about elites winning and everybody else losing. What did you make? Continuing, he is the establishment now. He's the president, but still that anti-establishment message, Nahal.
Well, you know, the thing is that I found really fascinating was, yes, it was a very populist message. I mean, he spoke about, you know, things like American carnage and there being basically factory shells all over the country and people without jobs. It was, and the idea that we're going to restore true democracy, give the power to the people. But then that's just what he's saying. What I found interesting is that, you know, his cabinet is full of billionaires, or it's going to be full of billionaires and very, very wealthy people from Wall Street and Goldman Sachs and just places that you would think are the definition of the establishment. So this thing where Trump says things but then takes actions that seem to undercut his message, the question is how long is that going to go on and at what point will it continue? And at one point, will the people who voted for him become disillusioned, if ever? So it was a really fascinating type of exercise of rhetoric on his part, just making these claims, making it sound like, you know, he didn't use the words this time, "I alone can fix it," like he did at the convention speech. But, you know, he made it very much sound like people should just trust in him and his administration to fix everything and that they were going to make it a real populist type of movement. But then when you look at who he's bringing into power, you have to question what exactly those policies are going to end up looking like.
And Phil, do you think people, maybe even Donald Trump supporters, are going to be watching for that kind of contradiction?
Well, it's interesting because I think the message that he kind of concludes the speech with is that the sort of the pathway for kind of accomplishing these goals is not necessarily through sort of immediately returning power to the people under any conditions, but what he says is kind of patriotism, which is a value that has, I think, if you look at past Republican inaugural addresses, doesn't actually get raised to quite the same level. Usually Republican presidents will articulate sort of the importance of sort of individual liberty and personal responsibility. But for Trump, the key value in the speech is patriotism. And so the question, I think, for me is not necessarily just whether or not people are going to watch and hold Trump accountable, but exactly what will he tolerate being held accountable for and under what conditions? I think that implicit in that message about patriotism is some suggestion that certain kinds of critiques are maybe not necessarily patriotic, which is, I think, for even from the perspective of past Republican speeches, be something that would be pretty shocking to hear.
Nahal mentioned the reference to carnage. I want to give a listen to that portion of the speech.
But for too many of our citizens, a different reality exists. Mothers and children trapped in poverty in our inner cities. Rusted out factories scattered like tombstones across the landscape of our nation. An education system flush with cash, but which leaves our young and beautiful students deprived of all knowledge. And the crime, and the gangs, and the drugs that have stolen too many lives and robbed our country of so much unrealized potential. This American carnage stops right here and stops right now.
And Phil, what do you make of that portrayal of the country? I mean, we're in the midst of a slow recovery, but it's a recovery. Homicide rates have been at historic lows over the last few years. An uptick last year, though. So there's not nothing there, but not all the numbers match up to that. What do you think?
I think that Trump is tapping into a kind of consciousness that doesn't necessarily relate to statistics that come out from the government, but actually to a consciousness that people who maybe have never experienced any of the things he's talking about just kind of intuitively feel. And so the question is, you know, how does he sustain that consciousness now that he has the power of the presidency, control over bureaucracies that, in fact, produce those statistics? So it's kind of an interesting question that we'll see going forward.
Talking to Phil Rocco, Marquette University poli-sci professor and political correspondent Nihal Tusi, looking at President Trump's inauguration today.
And we want to know what you thought of the inauguration. You can call us at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're picking up the conversation with Politico correspondent Nihal Tusi and Marquette University political scientist Phil Rocco about President Trump's inauguration day.
You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Are you feeling hopeful after hearing what President Trump had to say, or are you worried about what the next 4 years will hold? Call in at 800-642-1234. And what do you think of the picture he painted of the United States in 2017? 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to our callers. Jerry is with us in Milwaukee. Jerry, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What did you think?
Well, I saw some of it, and I'll tell you, be very frank with you. From my perspective, it was like watching an occasion in Finland someplace. Two Caucasians. Including the pundits, you know, there was no color there, no other perspectives, and the amazing thing about it is that the pundits, so-called, didn't even pick it up.
Jerry, thanks for the call. He's Jerry, not seeing, I guess, diversity reflected in what he saw in the inaugural. Nihal, from where you were sitting, what did you see?
There was very little, diversity generally in Trump's. The people he selected to serve with him, the people who voted for him, generally speaking, are Caucasian. But that being said, there have been some attempts by the Trump team. They've brought on some women, some minorities. It's not quite as bleak a picture as some might think, and especially when it comes to, for instance, gay rights. There's some hope within the gay community that the Trump team won't necessarily try to roll back a lot of the achievements that they have made. So it's certainly a different picture than the Obama years. I think it's going to be a much more appeal to the white working class than minority groups. But it's going to be very interesting. Also, I wanted to make one other point that Phil pointed out earlier. He was talking about Trump's theme of patriotism throughout, but a lot of people would argue that it was almost more about nationalism than patriotism, and that was it's a very different thing. The nationalism thing, historically speaking, that's been a much more dangerous approach and something that a lot of other countries would be very worried about. Patriotism is a different value that a lot of people on all sides of the aisle would think is a good thing, but nationalism can lead to some dangerous actions.
Yeah, Phil, totally
agree.
And thanks a lot for the call, Jerry. We'll go back to our callers. Joanne in Hales Corners is with us now. Joanne, hi.
Hi.
What did you think?
I think President Trump nailed it. Everything he said in his speech, I thought he was dead on. I've been working in factories over 20 years, and I've seen the impact of companies wanting to go overseas, taking jobs, lower pay. I live just outside the Milwaukee area, and a day hasn't gone by where I put the news on in the morning and you hear about somebody being killed, shot, robbed. Just everything he said, I think he definitely hit it dead on. Right on.
Joanne, thanks a lot for calling in. And Phil, let's start with that first point. I mean, Donald Trump obviously through the campaign, that economic nationalism thing, the not wanting corporations to move overseas, trade deals, he said, had hurt American workers. And he continued that. And Joanne was happy about it in this inaugural speech today, Phil.
Yeah, so I think that those themes and his commitment to actually addressing the sort of economic issues of, you know, white working class voters is something that, and, you know, confronting them head on is something that is a kind of break for Trump with his party. And especially on trade, I think that, Trump's commitment to sort of renegotiating the U.S.'s participation in major trade deals is something that still rubs a number of members of his party the wrong way. And ultimately, they will have some say in how that is handled in the next few years. And so it will be interesting to see whether or not they are willing to sort of do battle with Trump over that, and to what extent their positions on that will begin to cost them support, and whether or not Trump will sort of maintain that is an issue in the next few years.
And Nihal, what about the view of Donald Trump's words on trade from outside the country, from trade partners, maybe trade adversaries around the world?
Well, see, this is what's really fascinating. You know, he does talk very tough on trade. He makes America sound very isolationist. And he acts as if other countries don't have the ability to, for lack of a better word, retaliate on this front. So when Donald Trump says, look, you know, we're going to get better deals, he acts as if other countries don't have the ability to negotiate as well and won't want to get something out of those deals, too. But they do. And this is the thing. I mean, if the U.S., for instance, under Trump, decides to completely abandon the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade agreement, which it's going to do, that has now given China an opening to start its own trade negotiations and its own trade pacts with Asian countries, because China was not part of the TPP. So that, instead of actually weakening China, Trump has actually given China an opening to get stronger on the trade front. So there's a lot of rhetoric that he can use, but at the end of the day, the policies that are going to come about, he's going to find are not as simple as him sitting down with a table and making a demand, because the other side has demand too, and the other side has leverage as well. After all, they're the ones who are selling us products and buying our products. They are part of this trade front too, and just ignoring that and making it sound like America can just get whatever it wants every time, it's not as simple as you think it is.
Talking to Nihal Tusi from Politico and Phil Rocco from Marquette University. Back to our callers as we talk about Donald Trump's inaugural address and today's inauguration. Virginia is with us in Hennepin County, I think, Minnesota. Virginia, hi. I'm hearing our broadcast there. Let's move on to Susan in Wausau then. Susan, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I was listening today, and then a remark he made disturbed me more when he said that not only was he going to change the course of America, but of the world. And when he said the course of the world, it just, again, I think you were talking about this earlier, the isolationist viewpoint he has, nationalistic. But I just thought if I was sitting on the other side of the ocean listening to that, I'd be like, well, who are you to say you're going to change the course of the world during your administration? I thought, what was your take on that?
Susan, thanks for the call. And if I'm remembering that portion, I think he was referring not just to himself, but to the people power he said was being unleashed with his inauguration. But Phil, what do you make of that? Big changes Donald Trump says in the U.S. and the world coming.
Yeah, I think that the question for me is whether or not his appointees on the foreign policy side really have an interest in kind of undermining the sort of longstanding U.S. commitment to sort of an international presence, especially with respect to the U.S.'s position in NATO. I think these, it's questionable whether or not his appointees on foreign policy really agree with him on becoming that isolationist, especially if they care about achieving other sort of foreign policy objectives. They're sort of not quite as easy as simply committing to turning away from international institutions and renegotiating some of those positions would be pretty consequential for not just sort of the U.S.'s position within those institutions, but also for U.S. interests that do business abroad. So I think that, again, this is something where the messaging might actually depart to some extent from the policy, or it might have to depart to some extent from the policy.
We're starting to wrap up, Nahal. As Inauguration Day passes by and recedes, Donald Trump is expected to be signing executive orders soon. What kind of stories are you looking for? What items are you going to be covering in these first few days of the Donald Trump presidency?
Well, I expect we'll see a number of executive orders on anything ranging from, you know, pulling out of certain climate agreements or perhaps some new effort to enforce the Iran nuclear deal. The people on the who are refugee advocates wonder if he'll put out an order basically completely shutting down or very much changing America's ability to resettle refugees, especially from Muslim countries. So we're going to it's going to be a number of things. But the other thing, quite frankly, that I'm going to be looking for is a lot of chaos, because this transition has not been smooth by any means. There's still so many people at various agencies like the State Department who literally don't know what they're supposed to be doing in the next few weeks because they have not been told. It's going to be, I would promise, quite chaotic. There could be a lot of power struggles within the Trump team, especially if cabinet agencies get their new leaders confirmed, and those new leaders have their own ideas about what to do, and they wrangle with other people in the White House, in the Trump White House. And so I just think we're going to see a lot of chaos, a lot of confusion, and a fair amount of gridlock. It's going to be very, very interesting to watch.
And in about half a minute, Phil, what are you going to be watching for?
I'm going to be watching for, especially with the first 100 days, the president will be dealing with a central policy objective, which is repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act, something that he's promised to do while maintaining coverage for Americans and lowering costs. And none of the Republican plans that are currently in Congress really have the ability to do that. So it'll be interesting to see how he kind of manages that promise with the plans that are on the table. Similarly, I think it'll be interesting to see how there's a power struggle between the Trump administration's sort of budget ideas and those of Republicans in Congress. I think the spending, the amount of spending that Trump would have to do for an infrastructure plan is much larger than Republicans in Congress historically have tolerated. And so it'll be interesting to see exactly what use Trump can make of the fact that he was just elected in order to cajole some agreements along those lines.
I'll jump in there. Thanks to both of our guests, Phil Rocco from Marquette University, Nahal Tusi from Politico, joined us to recap President Trump's inauguration today.